So I'm going to be speaking mainly on Isaiah 5 today, but I will reflect on the gospel at the end. You know, most of the time, life is just ticking by, isn't it? Like there's a predictability to most of our lives. We get up, maybe we go to work. We have, the people in our lives who are the important people, the people that we love. Maybe we have flat days, maybe we have good days, but on the whole, we are okay. We are doing okay. And there's a certain type of peace to that. It's almost like you're sitting at the kitchen table listening to the radio. That's a line from a song called The Spinning Song by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. I'm not sure if anybody knows Nick Cave. He's been around for a while. I've only like recently discovered him. But in this song, he has this image and he says this is the last image he has of his wife, actually. She's sitting at the kitchen table listening to music on the radio when the phone rings and they get the devastating news that their 15-year-old son has died in this tragic accident. So I want to try and play just the beginning of this song, just in case you haven't heard Nick Cave before, so you get a sense of what the song sounds like.
The feather spun upward, upward and upward, spinning all the weather vanes. And you're sitting at the kitchen table, listening to the radio.
Of his son's death has come this outpouring of songs from Nick Cave as he tries to like gather up the pieces and somehow put them back together again. And this rupture has impacted every aspect of his life, including his songwriting. He says, I can't write songs the way I used to. Before I might craft like a narrative, a linear storyline, a song that has like a neat ending. But I can't do that anymore. And so Nick's songs have become a lot more experimental in response to this rupture. And in a similar way, when we come to Isaiah, this is what Isaiah is doing as well. And I wonder sometimes if maybe we don't get it. Maybe that's why we can find books like Isaiah or the prophets a little bit uncomfortable. Because maybe we haven't experienced rupture. Maybe we're still sitting at the kitchen table listening to music and life is okay. But it's really important to grasp when you're reading the book of Isaiah that Isaiah is responding to rupture. And there's this outpouring of words and images and songs as he's trying to pick up the pieces and make sense of what is happening in his community. And so when we come to Isaiah 5, we see an example of Isaiah responding to this rupture. He begins this song, and this song almost sounds like a romance ballad in the beginning. So listen to how it begins again.
Isaiah 5, verse 1. Now I will sing for the one I love, a song about his vineyard. My beloved had a vineyard on a rich and fertile hill. He plowed the land, cleared its stones, and planted it with the best vines. In the middle, he built a watchtower and carved a wine press in the nearby rocks. Then he waited for a harvest of sweet grapes. The grapes that grew were bitter.
Things are more than okay. Things are really well in the beginning. This song is a romance song, almost like he's singing to his lover, although a little bit curiously, he's not actually singing to the person he loves. He's singing about his beloved's vineyard. But it's really common actually this time for men to write ballads, and often they would blur the lines between like the land and women. So often, there's metaphors describing the land in very feminine terms. Think of the Song of Songs would be an example, or you have songs about like lovers meeting amongst the vines. So that's what this song feels like. It feels like a romance, except as I said, it's not about a person. It's about a piece of land, this gorgeous, rich, fertile piece of land full of possibilities, which his beloved sees and wants to cultivate. And so we have this description of this beloved one tending the land. Now it's slow and painful work. You have to like clear out all the boulders, maybe pull up some weeds. It says, you know, he finds like the choicest vine so he can plant it. So the seeds are planted and then he's watering and looking after it. And not only that, he actually goes the extra mile. Like he builds, yes, a wine press, but also a watchtower. Now you don't actually really need often a watchtower, but this is like an extra layer of protection. So it's a substantial investment in time and money. And then you can imagine as this owner is waiting for the harvest, like this owner is dreaming of what will happen, of the time when he'll be able to sit at the kitchen table with a glass of wine and go like, this came from my land. This is enjoying the fruit of my labor. Or perhaps he imagines like, I'm going to create the finest wine and it's going to be celebrated all across the world. But then comes the rupture. Instead of sweet grapes, he bites into the grapes and they taste bitter. Now, sometimes this does happen, particularly if vines aren't pruned. Sometimes the nutrients, instead of going to the grapes, will go to like to the leaves and branches, or sometimes parasites might get in and spoil the crop. But this owner has been paying such careful attention. There's been no neglect. This owner has been so attentive. And so at this point, it's like the song breaks down. As this rupture takes place, the song stops being a romance. And instead it becomes a little bit more experimental. As this new voice speaks and we begin to hear the owner speaking, and the owner says this.
Isaiah 5 verse 3. Now you people of Jerusalem and Judah, you judge between me and my vineyard. What more could I have done for my vineyard that I have not already done? When I expected sweet grapes, why did my vineyard give me bitter grapes?
The owner is bewildered, disorientated. Rupture can do that to us, can't it? We ask why. Why do these things happen? Especially when we feel like we've done a lot of work. You know, I've exercised well. I've eaten well. And suddenly out of nowhere, I'm sick. Like, why has this happened to me? Or maybe, you know, I've saved up money and I finally got a deposit and I've been able to purchase a house. But now the rates keep going up and up and I can no longer afford to keep up and I'm going to lose everything. Like, why has this happened? Well, I was just going along, and my life was okay. There was good days and bad days. And then out of nowhere, my country is suddenly at war and my child is dead. Like, why? Or I had a house and it was a nice house, and then a bushfire came and suddenly I have nothing. Like, why? Why do bad things happen to good people? This question lingers. And while Isaiah 5 doesn't give an answer, I think it gives us permission to ask such questions. I don't know if any of you have been following like the current AI discussion that's kind of been happening this year with ChatGPT coming and the incredible advances in technology to be able to create, you know, whatever you want, really, like poems, essays, songs. There's been a lot of conversation about what this means and what does it mean for us to be human. Anyway, someone decided it would be a good idea to ask this AI system to create a song kind of in the flavor of Nick Cave. And so it did. And then they sent it to him to get his like comment. And let's just say Nick isn't a fan of this technology. And I think it really offends him because for Nick to be a songwriter, like he takes it very seriously. To be a songwriter is to wrestle and to struggle and to like kind of tear into your inner soul and dig into the subconscious. To write songs or to sing songs is a very human thing to do. And for Nick, to be human is to be messy, and it's to ask questions that don't always have answers. And so I think in a similar way, Isaiah 5 is this gift to us where these questions have been asked that don't have immediate answers. I don't know about your theological tradition or upbringing, but sometimes, especially in the tradition I've come from, I feel like Christians can be uncomfortable with being human. Like it's almost like the dream is to become an AI system. And sometimes in my tradition, we can have faith and doubt, and it's like you've got to choose one or the other. And sometimes I feel like we present Jesus as this like neat formula, like just follow Jesus and everything will be all right and you have no more problems and all the questions you have will be answered. But when I look at the scriptures, when I look at Isaiah, I actually don't see that. I actually see wrestling and struggle and questions. And I think what God desires is for us to become more human. Or we might say what God desires is for us to become more like God. Because that risk and that struggle and that vulnerability and that feeling is also who God is. And we get to see a glimpse of that more as we continue in this passage.
Isaiah 5 verse 5. Now let me tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I'll tear down its hedges and let it be destroyed. I'll break down its walls and let the animals trample it. I'll make it a wild place where the vines are not pruned and the ground is not hoed, a place overgrown with briars and thorns. I'll command the clouds to drop no rain on it.
Into the rupture comes despair, so overwhelming. It's like it annihilates everything in its path. This is love that is spent. All the order, all the cultivation is kind of like being ripped aside. There's this ripping and smashing, this return to the wilderness, this sense of abandonment. Now, the hard thing to work out is who is speaking in this song. So on one level, it's this owner of this vineyard. But on another level, particularly when you see the last line, you know, I will allow no clouds to drop rain on it. Like you start to think, okay, this sounds like God speaking to us. So there's God here speaking, but also it's Isaiah. It's Isaiah speaking, trying to make sense of what he's seen in the community around him. Songwriters can almost be like prophets. There is a mystery to songs in how they draw on music and images, trying to speak often, I think, about the divine, pointing to what really matters. Now, I don't know if this is Isaiah's first attempt to write a song. It is the first time a song appears in this book, but it won't be the last time. And it's like Isaiah is using this to try and make sense of what is happening, because he's living in a time where it's not a romance song. In fact, he's living in a time where there aren't no noble landowners carefully looking after the land. Instead, those who can are buying up as much land as possible. Even if that means evicting peasants off the land, they're more than happy to rupture other people's lives so that they can live well. Or they can, like, you know, raise the taxes or increase their profit that way. Isaiah is living in a time where there is wild partying and high living on the one hand, and on the other hand, there is extreme poverty. Isaiah is living in a time where there is corruption in the courts, where there is, you know, if you can, bribes taken, so the guilty are let off while the innocent remain in prison. And so Isaiah crafts this song in response. And this song is kind of raw and violent. There's almost a sense that Isaiah wants destruction, that Isaiah almost longs to see this smashing and tearing away. And I think that's because Isaiah is in distress by what he's seen in his community around him. He wants something to change. And so this song has a way of haunting you, of getting under your skin. I wonder if you think that songs can do that, that songs have a way of being able to haunt you. The album that was released after Nick's son's death is called Skeleton Tree. And it is a really almost a spiritual thing to listen to it, because it seems to allude a lot to his son's death, even though a lot of the songs are actually written prior to his son's accident. So the first song of the album, Jesus Saves, begins like this. It says, "You fell from the sky, crash landed in a field, near the river Adieu, flowers spring up." Flowers spring from the ground. Now, Arthur would die in an accident by falling off a cliff. And so there's something almost prophetic, depending on what you mean by that word, by prophetic, but something like speaking to what is about to happen, something spiritual in the songs. And even in the making of this album, Nick has shared, was this real spiritual moment. And in some ways, that's what Isaiah is doing too. Isaiah's song is not just about a vineyard, like it's pointing to the spiritual reality of the people. And I guess hinting also what is to come, that the people are going to go into exile, that they're going to be cast out of the land, that there's going to be this massive rupture in their lives. And so the song ends, just to make it really clear, and just in case you haven't grasped who this song is for, what it's about, the song ends with these words.
Isaiah 5 verse 7. The nation of Israel is the vineyard of the Lord of heaven's armies. The people of Judah are his pleasant garden. He expected a crop of justice, but instead he found oppression. He expected to find righteousness, but instead he heard cries of violence.
It's not just people who ask why. I think God asks why. Like, why is their oppression? I expect justice. Why is there oppression? Why, instead of righteousness, am I seeing violence? Why, when I poured so much love into this community, does love seem absent, Israel? Like, what has happened here? This song almost has this sense of a rupture happening in God's self. And this song ends on this note. It ends with no neat endings. It ends with this yearning, which has no answer yet. Sometimes when people go through rupture, they speak about not finding answers, but having this sense of connection, or this heightened sense of love. And Nick Cave was speaking recently to a journalist named Sean O'Hagan about the creative writing process, but he also speaks about grief. And he says, you know, I went through this stage of like tearing and smashing, and I've been in the wilderness and asking lots of questions. But at the same time, and it's hard to put this into words, but at the same time, he says, like, I felt this deep sense of love. Like, I suddenly had this overwhelming compassion for everyone around me. I suddenly had this sense of the world being incredibly fragile and beautiful. And it's made Nick almost draw closer to God or to the divine, this sense that the world in the end is held in love. And so Nick says, like, I'm changed. I'm transformed by this experience. I'm not the same person. I now have this sense that I want to live into this love, that I want this love to overflow in me. And I think about God, and I wonder if this is God's experience too, that the struggle to work with Israel, the struggle to work with us, like, builds this deeper commitment of love, God. Isn't that one of the mysteries of suffering? Like, I don't want suffering. I do whatever I can to avoid like any bit of pain. I don't want suffering, and we ask why it happens. But yet one of the strange things about suffering is that it often is the time when we grow. And it's kind of like when everything is stripped away, we find ourselves like clinging on to God, clinging on to love, and we find ourselves being transformed. Nick says maybe sometimes grief has the power to do this. And reflecting on the pandemic and the lockdowns, he said, like, that was a really interesting time for us as a society, because it opened up the possibility for, like, massive transformation. So this is a quote from him.
I may be completely off the mark here, but it does seem possible, even against the criminal incompetence of our governments, the planet's ailing health, the divisiveness that exists everywhere, the shocking lack of mercy and forgiveness, where so many people seem to harbour such an irreparable animosity towards the world and each other, even still, I have hope. Collective grief can bring extraordinary change, a kind of conversion of the spirit, and with it a great opportunity.
I think this is what Israel goes to discover through their experience of exile. And I think this is what Jesus picks up on as well, which we heard in the gospel reading today. Jesus also drew on the story of the vineyard, saturated with Isaiah. He knows Isaiah well, but also vineyards, you know, are common in this land. And so Jesus also tells a very similar story of an owner planting a vineyard. And once again, there's the wine press and the watchtower. But in this story, there's a difference. The owner leaves and he puts some farmers in charge to look after the vineyard, but he still expects, you know, progress reports and some share of the harvest and says, you know, I will return soon. But the farmers seem to think that this land is theirs. And so whenever people come back to check in, they are very violent. They cast them out. They want to have nothing to do with this owner. And the owner is really bewildered and is like, what's going on here? I know, I'll send my son and my son will be respected. My son will sort this out. But the farmers think, well, this is our chance. Like if we kill the son, the heir, then this land will be fully ours. When we've soaked this land in blood, then it'll be fully ours. And so they do, they kill the son. But Jesus says they don't understand that rupture is where God works, that it's at this point of death that transformation is going to come, that there's going to be an end to injustice and violence, and that actually through this event will come a people who are able to bear good fruit. God is the God of rupture. God is the God of resurrection. And so we should be confident in knowing we don't have to be afraid of ruptures. I mean, sometimes we might be afraid, but we don't have to be afraid because God is not afraid of ruptures. And maybe we need to listen to music that can remind us of that. We need to listen to prophets who speak about this, that in times of upheaval or change, whether in our own lives or collectively, yes, there'll be deep pain, but there is also deep love. And one of the mysteries is that sometimes we meet God in these moments. I don't know, maybe it's because we're more open. I'm not sure why, but sometimes in those moments, transformation happens. New life begins. Isaiah will keep turning over the image of the vineyard. And in fact, later in Isaiah 27, he will give a second song. And it's a lot more hopeful than this song. It's like the dust has settled a little bit. And it testifies to God's heart for his people, that God is still with us no matter what is going on. And so I want to play a little bit of the song to start to close this time before I think we go into communion.
Amen.